Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Necromancy in New Orleans by Auburn Tempest and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Rachel DeLude. Chapter 1. I have no idea how he got a bag of Eros's lust dust, but when he called forth the wind, he tossed it into the air like it was nothing and let it spread over the entire Greek battlefield. Nikon laughs. Dionysus grins unrepentantly.
And so the saying, make love, not war, was born. You're welcome.
Laughter rings around the bonfire, and I snuggle into Sloane's side. The night is warm, and the energy in the air tingles over the surface of my skin. When I breathe deeply, my lungs fill with the scents of cherry coke and burning cedar logs. Overhead, the deep midnight blue sky hangs as the backdrop to the silhouettes of dragons, arcing and soaring in aerial acrobatics. All around, their faces lit up by the golden glow of the fire and the joy of being together, are the people I love most in this world. This is perfect. Thank you. Sloane winks at me and kisses the side of my head.
You're welcome. I thought a weekend here on the island with your family would do us all good.
I can't believe I asked Gran and Granda if we could get married at the training rings. What was I thinking? I can't get married without Brenny. Sloane's arm lays heavily across the back of our fireside love seat, and he squeezes my shoulder.
We thought it through before anyone was left out. No harm done. This is where we are now.
I lean back and breathe in the power of Emmett's Fantasy Island, smiling up at Dart and Saxa, dancing across the moonlit sky with the others. Mid-July, perfect weather, my entire family, my blood and bond, together, and no chaos or calamities permitted until Monday morning. It doesn't get any better than this. You can still opt for a traditional bachelor party, you know. I don't want you to miss out. Sloane's lounging beside me, looking as relaxed and content as I've seen him in the 2 years we've known one another.
I couldn't want for anything more perfect than this, love. Perhaps the men who need drunken nights out on the town and strippers and trips to Vegas want their last moments of bachelorhood to be full of thrills and excitements. But I'm the opposite. Our days are always filled and overflowing with excitement. This is what I crave.
My chest is so packed full of joy, I won't be surprised if I explode and scatter love shrapnel all over everyone. Same. There's a chinking of metal on glass. We glance across the fire to find Da standing behind Shannon's chair, holding up his beer. He's clapping it with his left hand, and his wedding band is ringing against the glass.
To Clan Cool.
To Clan Cool, we all repeat. Da meets my gaze from across the fire and smiles.
It's been a crazy couple of years for you, Muckery. Filled with a great many changes, but here we are, and we're all the better for it.
Hells yeah, Emmett exclaims.
Cool 2.0 rock socks,
Dylan adds. They're not wrong. I may be a tad biased, but from where I sit, our family has always been awesome. Now, through the iterations of becoming druids, finding our mates, and assuming our place in the magical world, we are even more amazeballs. Da chuckles.
Right you are, boys. We couldn't be prouder to welcome Sloane to the family officially. You're the perfect complement to Fee on all fronts, son.
True story. I kiss his cheek and smile across the flickering orange and gold flames.
And a kick-ass guy I'm proud to call brother, Aiden adds.
And a wickedly talented druid, Emmett chimes in.
And nice to look at,
Callum winks.
And really fucking rich, Dylan finishes.
Seriously? I blink at my middle brother. That was tactful. He shrugs.
Wealth might not mean anything to us and has no influence on our opinion of him. Still, it has come in handy on more than one occasion.
I give him that one. Fine, I can't argue that. Brendan stands and raises his glass. I'm a year and a half behind the others on getting to know you, but maybe that gives me a unique perspective.
Oh, here it comes.
Emmett shakes his ebony mop. Sorry, Irish. It has to be unanimous or you're out. I think the shoe is about to drop. Too bad, too. You had a good run.
Stop it.
I pick a marshmallow out of the bag and chuck it at him. It's about to peg him in the head when he turns and catches it in his mouth, laughing. Brenny doesn't miss a beat. It's obvious you've influenced the woman Fiona has become. It's true. She's always had a fiery strength, a stubborn redhead streak, and all-around awesomeness. But for her to blossom into the woman we have with us here, with all she's faced and overcome, she needed a solid foundation. Thank you for loving her enough to let her shine.
Sloane shakes his head. It's I who is thankful every day. You speak of needing a solid foundation. Well, your sister is that for me. She never cared about my looks, my money, or my standing in the Druid community. She was the first person who not only saw who I was behind the mask, but called me out on it. She made me take a good look in the mirror and challenged me to be more... to be better.
I pressed a hand on his chest. You had all that greatness inside you, Hotness. You just needed to see it in yourself.
Sloane's right, Fee.
Wallace looks a little more sad than proud.
You're the one who took the time to truly know him and to validate his wishes. For that, and for the love and guidance your family have always shown him, I am both humbled and grateful.
I press my fingers against my lips and blow Wallace a kiss. I respect a man who can not only admit when he's wrong, but get out of his own way to correct his mistakes. Wallace Mackenzie did that and more. Grandad's the next to have his say. He winks at me and nods at Sloane's father.
I thank you for the tip of the hat, Wallace. It's true. We always held Sloane in our hearts as one of our own. But you're right to give Fee the bulk of the credit. I may have lost an apprentice when I sent him to Toronto, but I gained a great deal more than that in return. Your boy found my kin and was the catalyst to bring our family back together, and for that, I'll be forever grateful.
I raise my bottle to toast Grandad's words and stand. Taking a moment, I scan the bonfire circle and am so filled with completeness that it's almost too much.
What's on your mind, Mokri?
Da asks. One of my last memories of Mam was of the two of us curled up in her bed. Da had taken Emmett and Dylan to hockey practice, and the rest of you were out and about, likely getting up to no good and terrorizing the neighborhood. Liam laughs and smacks Brendan on the shoulder.
That's a fair bet. No doubt,
Dylan agrees. Katie's affectionate gaze bounces from my bestie to my brother and back again. This is her first peek behind the cool veil, and we're all holding our breath that she can forgive Liam and the rest of us for keeping her at arm's length for her safety.
You were saying, Mokri.
Oh, right. I draw a deep breath and get back to my story. At the time, Mam was already declining and not feeling well, so we lay in her bed for hours, and she read my big fairy tale book. Do you remember the one?
Da nods. Aye, I do.
So, she read Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast, and when we finished with Sleeping Beauty, I asked her if princes were real or made up for stories. We don't have royal classes, and I was pretty sure they were make-believe.
Did your mom set you straight?
Da smiles across at me. My brothers are smiling at me, too, and I check that Da is good with my story. We learned not to talk much about our mother, or it would make Da heartbreakingly sad. Things are different now. With his hands closed over Shannon's shoulders, he looks as content and relaxed as ever. She did. Mam said there are two kinds of princes, fairy tale princes and secret princes.
How do we know the difference?
Dionysus asks, engrossed as he is in all things family. She said fairy tale princes are born from kings and queens and live in castles in far-off lands, while secret princes live among us, and we might never realize they are princes. When I asked if she knew any secret princes, her face lit up, and she made me pinky swear and promise not to tell. She said Da was for sure a secret prince, and if the angels took her up to live in the clouds, she didn't want me to worry or be scared about anything, because to be loved by a prince would make me strong and keep me safe. The moisture building in Da's eyes reflects the flickering of flames.
Your mother always had a special way of interpreting the world around her.
Yeah, she did. Tears glisten on Emmett's cheeks. My other brothers aren't doing much better. Before we all dissolve into a family huddle of tears, I turn to Sloane and get to my point. It's true. You came from a far-off land and lived in a castle, but I knew your secret long before anyone else figured it out. You are my very own secret prince, even with all the dangers that come at me. Being loved by you makes me strong, and it keeps me safe. Sloane blinks fast, but there's no helping it. He wipes his fingers under his eyes as he stands and draws a steadying breath.
I'm honored to be your prince, and if the fates allow it, I'll take the position indefinitely.
Oh, they'll allow it,
Dionysus interjects, his deep voice thick with emotion.
We made a deal. I wouldn't give up my magic mojo for just anyone. The two of you are in for a long life together, and it's all in the fine print.
I curl my fingers and make a heart over my chest. Somehow, I was blessed with more than my fair share of princes.
Look, I don't believe that's happenstance, love,
Gran offers.
I didn't get the chance to know your mam, but it sounds like you've had a bit of spiritual intervention guiding your path.
Shannon chuckles.
Aye, well, if there was any way to stack the world in their favour, there's no doubt that's how things went.
Da rounds the fire and opens his arms, hugging Sloane and me at once.
I wish you both every happiness in the days and years to come.
Thanks, Da.
Thanks, Niall.
He steps back and swallows.
If I had to be replaced as the prince in her life, I'm pleased you're the man to wear my crown. I know you understand the weight of loving a woman like Fee, and I wish you well.
I bark a laugh.
I'm not that bad, says the girl with the mayhem magnet stamped on her back,
Emmett says.
I'll never complain.
Dylan hugs Eva to his side.
If Fee wasn't such a hot mess, we may never have met Nikon, Dionysus, or my sweet angel.
Eva's angelic smile is wide and her dimples deep. If you all weren't in the crosshairs of the world, I might never have been able to change my designation.
I shrug. I'm happy my life chaos works for you.
Just like that, the tears get wiped away, and Clan Cool is back to smiles and laughter.
Emmett, this is your island. Play us some tunes.
Da groans.
Anything but that damnable song you live to torture me with. I swear it's the most asinine.
It's too late. The opening chorus of Cotton Eye Joe is already ringing through the night, and Emmett is bounding over to the open grass. He grabs Kinu on his way, and a moment later, he's dancing like a fool.
Awesome sauce.
The celebration of my impending nuptials with Sloane goes on into the wee hours of the night. The liquor flows, the bonfire burns, and the music never stops. Hour by hour, our family peels away and heads to bed. Gran and Granda aren't staying in the Golden Dildo, so Nikon snaps them home to the cool Shire when they've had enough. Da and Shannon eventually walk up through the city streets and leave the younger generation to our fun. Younger is a subjective term. Dionysus and Nikon certainly don't qualify, but the Greeks are living proof that age is only a number. The two of them are the princes of partying and have taught me how precious it is to celebrate the small moments. They're also amazing dancers. With Dionysus wholly human for the time being, it was up to Eva to magic us a dance floor in the open meadow by the Prana River. Dylan's angel love didn't seem to mind. Dylan has a suave grace that girls have always swooned over. Being an angel hasn't sparred her from his charms. By the wee hours of the morning, the buzz and swirl of a great night are closing in, and I'm content to cling to my fiancé as he maneuvers us around the dance floor. Sloane, too, has the moves and coordination of Fred Astaire.
You look exhausted, love.
I'm as pliable as a well-cooked noodle in his arms. With his skills, he leads me wherever he wants to go, and he makes us both look good. I'm dead on my feet, but can't bear to end the night. It's been perfect.
Oy, it has.
It's been too long since we had a simple celebration where no one is missing, bleeding, or in danger. I want to remember this feeling forever.
Either that, or we'll have to keep doing it, again and again, so you don't get the chance to forget.
Mm-hmm. That would be good, too. The two of us pass Callum and Kevin, Liam and Katie, then Aiden and Keanu. Each of the couples is slow dancing in the center of the dance floor. Dionysus and Nikon are taking turns dancing with Sarah. After a great deal of drunken prompting an hour ago, she finally accepted that the family event was over and agreed to join the festivities. I know Emmett doesn't want to rush from Sarah to Ciara and back to Sarah, but I've always liked the White Witch. Besides, they've both grown since the first time they dated. Sarah isn't as tame, and Emmett isn't as wild. That's good for both of them. Emmett laughs, and I turn my head, as Sloane and I dip and rise across the smooth floor. Em is laughing with Nikon, leaning close and whispering between themselves. Knowing the two of them, it's likely something completely inappropriate. I chuckle to myself just imagining. Promise we'll never take it all for granted. Sloane's hand is firm on my back as he sweeps me along with his rhythm.
I promise, although I doubt that will be a problem. The nature of our lives acts to remind us of what matters most. I don't suppose we'll ever take each other or anyone else for granted.
That makes me feel better. My head is starting to feel too heavy to hold up, so I shift closer and rest my cheek against his shoulder. I'm tired, Mackenzie. Let's go to bed.
As you wish, Agra. To bed it is.
Chapter 2.
Fee, can you hear me?
Locked in the warmth of a semi-dream state, I stir beneath the covers and drift back toward blissful oblivion.
Fee, sorry to wake you, but I do need you to wake up.
The words echo in my mind and rouse me. Blinking against the blue-gray light of pre-dawn, I scowl and shield my eyes. Is this what it's like to be a vampire? To feel like sunlight is burning through my retina and blinding me with a searing brightness? Okay, I'm being a drama llama. My mind plays back the reason I'm awake, and I try to focus on the voice in my head. Bruin is in his place within, and neither stirring nor agitated. Dionysus doesn't have his powers. That leaves Nikon or Dart, who can speak to me on a mental channel.
Yeah, I'm awake. What's up?
There's something weird happening in the city. I think you need to get Emmett and come outside.
Dart isn't an alarmist, nor does he disturb me when I've tucked in for the night. The fact that he has tells me I need to pay attention to his concerns and not brush him off until morning. Which is exactly what I want to do. I'm half drunk, and the world is spinning like a funhouse ride at the fair.
Yeah, buddy, okay. I'm up. I'm coming.
Sitting up, I use both hands to brush my hair back and pull myself back into the land of the living.
Agra, what is it, love?
Wow, it must be early if I'm waking Sloane up. Dart's worried about something that's happening in the city. He woke me up and wants me to get Emmett and come outside. Sloane flips back the covers, and I have the supreme pleasure of watching the muscles in his back stretch and flex as he spins to sit on the edge of the bed and pull a shirt on.
Did he say what the trouble was?
No, only that something weird is happening, and he thought we better come out and see for ourselves. He holds his hand out to help me scooch across the bed and get up. I can do it on my own, but I never turn down a chance to accept his kindness.
Take a moment pulling yourself together and I'll wake Emmett.
Brenny might be a good idea, too. If it's island-related, they're in this thing together.
Aye, all right. Shall we meet downstairs?
Sure, in the head's room. The palace of the hidden city is big enough that it's a good idea to be specific. Sloane strikes off, and I grab my clothes from last night and hustle into the bathroom to freshen up and get dressed. I'm only a couple of minutes behind him and manage to make it downstairs before the others. With the spare time I've garnered, I sit on the floor among the multitude of carved busts to pull on and lace up my boots. By the time I've got things done up, the boys are shuffling in, looking as groggy and sleep-deprived as I feel.
If this is one of your pranks, Bea, I'm going to shove someone in the Prana River.
Emmett grouses.
Rude,
Brendan chides.
Here I thought I've been a model citizen since returning from the dead.
I chuckle. It's been months since I've seen this side of Emmett.
It's not a prank, Cranky Pants. Dart wouldn't wake me up if there wasn't an actual problem to be addressed.
He rubs a hand over his chest.
I know. I feel the concern rising in the energy of the dragons. They've come across something that has them unsettled.
Dylan and Eva are the last to join us. He looks as rough as the rest of us. She looks like angelic perfection. It's a real hit to my feminine ego to surround myself with celestial beauties, immortals, and gods. Still, it's worth it. My circle of friends and family is amazeballs.
Is everyone else still hammered?
Dylan rubs a rough hand over his face.
Smashed,
Emmett confirms.
Banjaxed,
Sloane agrees.
Stewed,
Brendan adds. I chuckle. Isn't there a warning in the handbook not to operate a magical city while under the influence? Emmett laughs and blinks at me.
There's a handbook? I need a copy. We've been fumbling around in the dark for months.
Brendan grins.
Maybe whatever is causing the dragon anxiety is nothing volatile, and we can make quick work of things tonight to settle the dragons and circle back once we're not liquored up. Positive thinking, bro.
Dylan agrees.
Let's put that thought out in the world and manifest that as our outcome. What the fuck?
Brendan frowns.
Since when do you say shit like that? Manifest our outcome? Who are you and what have you done with our brother?
Dylan flips him off.
What, a guy can't evolve?
Brendan glances from Emmett to me and back at Dylan.
Evolve, sure, but we're in invasion of the Body Snatchers territory here.
Dylan gestures at the corridor.
Either we go to find out what's happening, I go back to bed, or I throat punch you. You pick. I'm tanked and not in the mood.
Brenny grins.
There he is. That's the Dylan I know.
I strike off toward the exit and catch Emmett's wrist as we go. Lead the way, O mighty champion of the island. Let's see what all the hubbub is about. The island of Awanablock isn't what it used to be. Through the centuries and up until the last millennium, it supported a bustling community of fae and empowered expats who took refuge here. People lived in the brightly colored homes. The bars were full and the streets were busy with the bustle of life. Something happened between them, and now that ended all that. When we first gained access to the island's inner sanctum, the security of the river's power was under challenge, and the invaders were trying to take control of the Prana. At that point, the city didn't come into play because it was cloaked, dormant, and uninhabited. When we were drawn into the past to prepare for the culling, we also learned how to reconnect the conduits to the source and resurrect the city in the present. Emmett became a keeper of Awanablock, and Aiden, Callum, Dylan, Nikon, Tad, Sloane, and I took an oath to stand as guardians of the island going forward. Then, when we returned to the present, more of us took the oath and established a direct connection to the island's power to strengthen our team for the battles to come. Brendan's connection to the island came later. Mother Nature gave him back his life as long as he lives here and doesn't affect the timeline of man. It was a no-brainer. Here we are with the conduit to the source reestablished, and the city's phasing ended, so it's once more on the physical plane. Yet we still don't know what happened to the island, the people who lived here, or the Lightweavers who stood as guardians to the once great city.
Where are we headed?
Sloane asks when we exit the Golden Palace. I'm not sure. The sky is still dark. Not the black of night, but the gray of the approaching dawn. Dart is soaring above us with his brothers and sisters, looking every bit as mythical and majestic as you would imagine. I reach across our union bond and send him my thoughts. We're here, buddy. Where are we going?
It's far. Do you see where Saxa perched on the fortification wall to your left?
I scan the distance. The gray skies grow darker and less distinct the farther I look until I see nothing. Not really, no.
Oh, right. Human eyes aren't good. One moment, I'll find a spot halfway and Sloane can portal you to me.
Dart drops one wing and swoops back, gliding over the city. When I'm losing him in the dusk sky, I speak up. Okay, that's good. Stay there and we'll come to you.
Really? This is as far as you can see? That's sad. I'm sorry for you.
I roll my eyes. It's fine. We're coming your way. Raising a pointed finger, I gesture at where Dart is hovering over the city in the distance. Dart's guiding us in. He says it's far and we need to portal. Sloane takes my hand and steps back. He glances around while everyone stacks their hands until we're all connected. A rush of his wayfarer magic tingles over my skin, and we're in the street below a hovering Dart.
Can you see Saxa now?
I squint into the distance and shake my head. Nope. Give us another midway marker. It takes Dart positioning himself two more times before I can finally see where Saxa perches on the wall of a castle-like fortification. Man, how far can dragons see? That's wild. That's where we're heading, Hotness. Sloane nods, and away we go again.
When he said it was far, he wasn't kidding.
Brendan looks back the way we came. Even with the segues, we haven't made it out this far.
That's probably why I didn't sense the change,
Emmett points out.
I feel it now, though. There's a disturbance in the Force.
Use the Force, Luke.
Brenny mimics Obi-Wan.
Luke, I am your father,
Dylan deadpans. I chuckle, but Emmett isn't laughing. His expression says either he's focusing hard on something, or his half-drunken state is about to turn on him, and he's trying to batten down the hatches before he spews in the street. Em, are you all right? He blinks back to awareness and frowns.
There's something weird happening here.
Nikon snaps in with Dionysus to join us.
It's a rift. It woke me up. There's an access point between the realms, and it's gaining power.
Well then, I'm glad you joined us. I step back to allow him a better view of what we face. You're the man, Greek. Why don't you and Emmett take the lead on this one? Nikon sighs.
I thought this was supposed to be a weekend away from our lives. I was enjoying the idea of not being called into action, or at least not this kind of action. I'm totally open to other kinds.
He winks at me and waggles his brows. Dionysus grins.
Oh, can I get in on that action?
I wave between us and point at the stone fortification of what appears to be a historic yet fully intact castle. When we get home, I'm getting you boys some ginkgo biloba so you can focus. The two of them laugh off my rebuff and get back to addressing the problem at hand. I don't think their advances are even serious anymore. It's become a game of teasing me. We've lost Emmett's attention entirely. He's shuffling toward a set of tall bronze doors inset from an elaborately carved stone arch. My shield isn't weighing in, but for some reason, that doesn't make me feel any better. Emmett's expression is pushing all my buttons of concern. It's more than focus and determination. There is something he finds disturbing. What is it, Em?
I'm not sure I can put it into words.
Magic is building, but there's something else. It's like a presence or an awareness I've never felt before.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?